I'm Floyd Hall, and this is a Wonder Root artist feature. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with printmaker and design artist, Lenny Gray Morris. Lenny, how are you?
I'm doing really well today. Thank you.
Glad to have some time with you today. Glad to have some time here in your studio, tucked away not too far from DeKalb Farmers Market, a stone's throw away. Really excited because you all can't see it. But really awesome, beautiful machines down here, your letterpress machines. And I think even seeing the machines helps me further understand your connection to your work because of the process that's involved. When did you first know that being an artist in this capacity is what you wanted to do?
It was about... I guess it was 5 years ago I touched a press and I realized that was just it for me. I'd been doing graphic design. I was tired of always working in a computer. I had a long history of working with machines when I was an arborist, using chippers and chainsaws and things like that. And I touched a press and just went, oh, this is it. This is what I'm supposed to achieve. And I then came home, told my partner it was what I was going to do. He thought I was crazy. And 6 months later, I had a press. So... it's just how it worked out. Building the studio has been an interesting exercise in intention because I got my first press on barter. I just put it out into the world and all of a sudden the contacts came to me and it all just happened. And I wasn't even prepared for it. I didn't know how fast it was going to unfold. But once it did, I was in it and I haven't stopped. So,
how many times a week do you go to the DeKalb Farmers Market?
Actually, I have to honestly say I almost never go to the DeKalb Farmers Market because I have an interesting partnership in where I don't do the food.
Okay.
Yeah. My partner is more domestic than I am, so he tends to do all the shopping and the cooking and all of those things while I'm doing all the business and the art and all of that. So it is very rare that I walk into the DeKalb Farmers Market personally, but we probably go once a day.
I mean, you're so close.
Yeah, no, like it's like, oh man, we need an onion. We're like the only people we know. They're like, I got to go to the store because I need a cucumber. And the DeKalb Farmers Market is our store.
Yeah, it's embarrassingly close.
Yeah, it is embarrassing. It's a 3-minute walk.
Yeah.
So we, anytime we need anything that is food related, we can just pop on over and it's nothing. It's like going to the local corner store for
sure.
Us. Our biggest problem is whenever we need something that is like a paper product. Like, oh man, we're out of paper towels. That's like a 3-mile trek to Kroger. So
yeah.
It's a little bit backwards in our world.
And the funny thing about that, not even funny, but I think when I tell people, you know, about Atlanta, people who aren't from here, I was having a conversation with some friends of mine and they were like, you know, if you could like pick out like 5 things that if someone was coming to Atlanta and you say, go these 5 places while you're in Atlanta, not necessarily tourist places, but things that would help you sort of orient yourself about mm-hmm. or around Atlanta. I would tell people to go to the DeKalb Farmers Market.
So would I actually. It is and has been the center of our universe.
Yeah.
So throughout, I met my partner when I was 17, and we've been together for over 17 years, and we traveled everywhere looking for the perfect home. We wanted like the best access to good food. We wanted a beautiful location to live in. We wanted a nice community, creative part of town. Like we wanted all these things. And so we left the Decatur area thinking we're going to go find it somewhere else. And we're all up and down the East Coast and out in Colorado and California, Hawaii, Toronto, Canada, Vancouver area, and ended up going, wow, you know, Decatur was kind of awesome. And we've never found better food than the DeKalb Farmers Market.
Wow.
In terms of price and freshness. And so we were like, wow, all those parameters that we thought we were going to go find in some amazing Mecca somewhere else, we already had at home. Plus we had all of our friends and family and our community. And eventually we realized that that's the part that was irreplaceable. Quality of your life was really good. And the DeKalb Farmers Market became the center of our universe. And so everywhere we lived, we had to be within biking distance to the market.
I could see that.
That was like that was our parameter. Like, we won't go further than we can ride a bike to the DeKalb Farmers Market.
Understood.
So
yeah,
I totally get it. And when we found this place, it was like, and it's a 3-minute walk. It's a cabin in the woods.
In the city.
In the city next to the DeKalb Farmers Market. It's pretty brilliant.
Doesn't get much better.
No, it doesn't.
Does not get much better than that. Where did you grow up?
Well, I started in Florida. I was born in St. Petersburg, but we left when I was about 5. And we moved to 5 miles outside of Archer, Florida, 5 miles outside of Newberry, Florida, 20 miles outside of Gainesville. So if you look at that on a map, it's literally the middle of nowhere. Archer was so small, they only had an elementary school. You had to go to the next town over to go to middle school or high school, which was Newberry. I lived a mile down a dirt road in the middle of horse and cow country.
In Florida.
In Florida.
Yeah, people don't realize that about Florida.
Yeah, it was north central Florida, so I was in the middle of fields everywhere. That's how I grew up, was out in the middle of the country. And so every day, like, we got, like, one TV station. It showed Star Trek. So the original series, I pretty much seen every episode many times. And other than that, I was, like, out doing stuff in the fields. Because when you have that much land to play in, you go do that. I also rode horses and trained them. So
you always seem to have this outdoors feel about yourself. Like, whenever I'm you know, talking with you, I always feel like you're itching to get outside.
I am always itching to get outside. I have a really close connection to being outside. A lot of my inspiration comes from being in the woods or out in nature. And I didn't realize how much that was a part of my life until I moved to the city. My grandparents lived in the Blue Ridge Mountains, and so every summer I spent hiking in the mountains. I lived out in the middle of the forest, or out in the middle of the country growing up. And then we moved to the Atlanta area, and all of a sudden I was in this, like, major metropolitan space. And I had literally never known anything like that until I was 12. And I didn't really get close enough to it until I was 15 or 16. And so I was already pretty well developed in my life as someone who loved being outside alone often. And suddenly I'm in the middle of the city. But then I got access to culture and all the things that the city has to offer that I wasn't exposed to before, the arts and things like that. And so there's this balance that kind of happens between them at this point.
I mean, and even still, considering the Atlanta area, you're not that far from a less urban environment once you kind of get outside of the city. So I think Atlanta is very unique in that way.
Mm. Yeah, it's really easy to go out into the woods here. There's so many natural spaces to get involved in. When I met my partner, he had been a Boy Scout forever. And so he was a guy we met in the club scene, and he was a guy who was in the club scene, but, you know, knew every knot under the sun and could survive in the wilderness. Loved to go backpacking and cycling. And so when we got together, he picked up on the fact that I liked being outside and was like, okay, well, we're going to go get you gear, and started taking me on backpacking trips. And we would go, like, way out in the middle of nowhere. And that's been a big part of our creative process. Like, whenever we need to just go, there's several places that we'll just pack up and leave, spend a few days in the woods and come back.
Even with your art representation, I look at your logo and it's sort of a leaf or a tree or something or another there. So I always feel, even when I look at that you would rather be outside.
It's very much a part of, yeah, it's what I do. I mean, I do in my photography, like, I do photography, but it's mostly nature.
Yeah.
I love doing landscapes, photographic images of life itself. I'm particularly inspired by those places because they remind me, in some ways, how completely small and insignificant I am, like, in the grand scale of things, and also how connected we all are to everything around us. It reminds me that, like, I don't get to be here without all the trees and everything else. It's part of what has given me an understanding of the concept of diversity, how important it is. Biodiversity, I don't think, is really any different from cultural diversity. Like, systems thrive and grow whenever you've got multiple aspects living in harmony with each other. And so nature has been one of my biggest inspirations because it's taught me those lessons, what it means to be interconnected to things that are not like yourself, but, you know, to rely on them in ways that you don't necessarily know you're doing. We take a lot of that for granted because we like to think of ourselves as the center of the universe when really it's all sort of it.
So did you have to consciously learn empathy or what that meant to you, or because of your connection to nature and really understanding how all of these things can grow together or can somehow coexist, did you already have a good concept of what empathy was?
I did not. As a kid? I did not have a good concept of what empathy was. I actually, it's not that I wasn't empathetic. I think I've always naturally been empathetic, but I didn't know what it meant because I actually grew up in a particularly violent environment. I had, like many people, alcoholic father, was an old war vet, two brothers who had no idea what to do with a little sister. And so they, you know, you either joined them or they kind of beat you up a little bit. And they weren't particularly empathetic. So a lot of my communication didn't pick up on that. I was always very combative and a little angry and expressive of some hostility. And it wasn't until, because I was fighting for my space. And it wasn't until I actually met my partner, who is a deeply sensitive, kind, feminist man who looked at me and was like, so how about all that anger and hostility and maybe don't do that? And he actually informed me how communication is incredibly important, how sympathy and kindness in communication is important in order to be able to communicate yourself or big ideas. You can't do that with aggression. Aggression tends to put people off or makes them defensive, as I learned, because when that was presented to me, my response was defensiveness. And so it took me going through my own process of dealing with a lot of violence up until my later teen years and recognizing how that had changed my own sense of empathy for myself. Even it made me automatically defensive on just about anything I did. And when I started working through all of that and had someone who was empathetic enough to do that with, it really taught me a lot about how important it is to be sort of in a constant state of recognizing that other people have really important stories and points of view, and finding ways to help them communicate that, or finding organizations that are trying to engage in them, because it showed me just how damaged a lot of people are, just how hurt so many people have been on emotional and cultural levels just because of the way things are. How disconnected we are from nature and this idea that we're all in a system together. It exposed me to the whole concept of, you know, socioeconomic oppression and all of these other really big ideas that allowed me to connect more than I ever had before. Partially because I could relate, but also partially because I understood what it meant to try and get through that, to transcend it in some way.
So as you have over time become more aware of the fact that people are damaged and the fact that there is oppression and the fact that things aren't always the best versions of themselves, how do you then contextualize that and then go to work and then know what you want to work on in a way that is productive and doesn't feel like it's heavy, you know, or too heavy for you to be productive?
That's a good question. I think that I am partially, and this comes back to me having some streaks of anger and hostility. I think a lot of that stuff makes me really angry. And one of the things that I've learned that I like to do when I'm angry is physical. I need to be making something. I can't just be in my head because it's frustrating. And so one of the reasons why I got into such a tactile medium was that produces something that is so soft and delicate and beautiful and sensitive is that it's a physical thing for me to do that's got big machines and it's a little clunky and oily and dirty. That helps me channel some of that into something that I know is going to be more positive in the end. It allows me to connect to the empathy, but also gives me a place where I can get messy and maybe break something accidentally, and you know, like,
and not be sorry about it,
and just be like, and that's what happened, and you know, and I can mess things up, and so that's all a part of that process, and that's one of the things that I loved when I found Letterpress was it was a place where I could make something beautiful that communicated on behalf of something that maybe wasn't. But it also, just through the act of doing it, gave me the opportunity to find a way to center myself. And you have to be really focused as a medium in with this medium because it's so detail-oriented. Everything goes down to, you know, infinitesimal amounts of space. And if it's off in one direction or another, then your registration is misaligned. All these other things happen. And so it's a way to, like, really hone in your focus and understand what you're trying to achieve. But because it's physical, you can take all that, like, energy and do something with it instead of just sitting in a computer and venting your frustration into social media or something, you know? Like, you can turn it into something. So,
well, talk about your process, because you, admittedly, with the kinds of projects that you take on, you are either grappling with yourself or you're dealing with organizations that are grappling with really big topics, really heavy topics. And how do you work through those issues, those challenges, and then find a way to communicate that through your work? So what is your process of I guess embracing all of the context of the work that these organizations are involved with, and then coming up with something that represents that in a visual way?
So I started my design career working in health and wellness, I was producing materials for people who were chronically ill and trying to find a new way to live, eat, and exercise and all these things. And seeing how the work that I was doing actually helped them grow was really valuable because it showed me that you could have a career where you're just doing your own thing, but can it exponentially affect somebody externally. It can change systems, it can change ways of thinking. And that led me into branding, because branding in terms of business organizations, pretty much the upper level of communication strategy, where you really get to understand what an organization is about. And the entire process of design thinking that goes into a brand strategy is you have to know who they serve, how they serve them, why they're serving them. You really have to understand with empathy what the organization is trying to achieve. And one of the things that I loved about it was that it pulled yourself out of it. It allowed a lens for you to look through to try and understand what someone else was going through and then how to problem solve for it. And I was doing that for years. It's actually what started the studio, and I was working with sustainability-based organizations. So I kept going in the health and wellness world, working with, you know, products-based brands, doing natural skincare companies and supplements and things like that, food products. And that moved into getting connected to a lot of nonprofits, and I actually found the social aspects of the problems nonprofits were trying to solve were much more interesting for me than whether or not you got a new skin cream. Not that those weren't amazing products or companies. I just didn't find the same value in working with them as I did in working with social, cultural, or environmentally based organizations. Partially because the people who get involved in that work are incredibly passionate about what they do. They're not necessarily working for the most money on the planet. They're doing it because they genuinely care about that organization. And so you get to surround yourself with a lot of really passionate people. I like listening to stories. I'm also a part of the lit scene here. And I go out and I like listening to people tell me about their perspective And I think design thinking is a part of that, and a part of my process, because it allows me to constantly try and put myself in someone else's point of view or in their shoes. And when I found printmaking, it was an opportunity to apply that as a problem-solving strategy, to use the history of communications in a way that was actually working on behalf of something that matters. And in this day and age, where we have so many problems facing us in socioeconomic situations, it was an opportunity for me to apply that in a way that made me, like, I personally got value out of it. Printmaking has also classically been collaborative, always. You know, the person who printed Moby Dick didn't write it. But they may have carved the type and set it all and did the binding and the paper making. Like, they did the process. They were the craftsmen that actually made that communication happen. And I found, as a print studio, that what I really wanted was that same sense of collaboration. I never wanted this to be a place that was about me. It was about us and what we can do. And so I started working on doing handmade journals and art books, because that's really a conversation that we have with ourselves. And the greeting cards that I started playing around with were all constructs of emotional sentiment, because letterpress is a way of immediately driving that sense of emotional connection. And they were a mix of, you know, whimsy or straightforwardness or an idea of what happens in a breakup. And the cards are always a connection between two people. You have to know their birthday or what they're going through in life. And it was a way of communicating or starting a conversation between people who genuinely care about each other. Everything's blank on the inside. And then posters are a way of communicating about our relationship to the rest of the world, and our connections to our environment and our culture, and society, and what we're facing. And I can do that as a collaborative model, because it's a way for me to engage, you know, essentially a chorus of voices. I never wanted anything to be in my style, like everything in my own style, because that would be a portfolio I don't want to look at. I'd much rather say, look, I met this person and we had a really great time and we connected in this way, and so this is what we made together. And that's how this studio essentially got built and has been a big part of my process, is inviting people into it and having them tell me their story. What do you need? What do you want? What are you trying to say that you are having a hard time saying? And then I'll figure out how I can make that happen for them. And so a lot of the work that I do commercially is just commissioned custom stuff, where people come to me and, look, it's my best friend's 30th birthday and I have to make them this super special thing. And the, you know, the one that I made that is that example is a girl wrote a poem that was all inside jokes between her and her closest friend. And she hires me to do this. And it's a mix of calligraphy and letterpress. And only her friend is really going to get the piece. It's a beautiful piece of art, but it represents 15 years of their connection to one another. And it was something special that they got to share. And people come and they ask me to do things like that. Some wedding invitations, you know, friends of mine that have special moments in their lives, baby showers.
Yeah.
Letterpress was made for communicating on behalf of things that mean something. So I tend to just go out into the world and look for meaning, and then connect with people who care about what that means, and then find a way to use the studio to represent that. And it's turned into a lot of amazing friendships and connections to people that show me a sense of humanity that gives me hope. You know, you deal with all these really deep topics, but what I actually find is so much generosity and compassion, because when you're dealing with the people who actually care about these topics, you're dealing with a lot of really empathetic, conscious humans. And so as much as you want to look at the world and see how damaged it all seems, what I've actually found is just how beautiful everyone around me is. It makes it a lot easier to bear. It doesn't seem like a struggle anymore when you realize that you're working in community with all these other people striving for the same things. Does that answer your question?
It does. No, very, very beautifully. Well, I want to let our listeners in on your process and perspective. And you kind of already touched on it as far as the A Year in Giving exhibit, but really what I want to do is, in case people don't get a chance to see the exhibit, mm-hmm. I would rather you sort of talk about the structure of the year-long collection of collaborations and talk about what that meant to you to be able to produce that. So that's sort of the framework for A Year in Giving, even though we want people to still come in and see it. But in case people hear this after the exhibit is already down, I would love for you to maybe talk about the big idea behind that and pulling all of that together.
I can actually say where all of that came from, because it was a series of aha moments. And it was in 2014. I was at a conference for AIGA, and one of my mentors here in Atlanta was talking to me about my business, and he's particularly successful, and I really look up to him and some of his opinions. And he just looked at me and said, "Posters, figure it out. Make art, make posters." And I was just like, "Yeah," but he was like, "No buts, make posters." And I was like, "Okay." He goes, "And that's it for today, you know, we're done." And I didn't know what to do with that. Like, I didn't exactly know what kind of poster art I wanted to make. And I tend to be a problem-solving driven sort of creative. I don't typically just sit down and like, and I'm going to illustrate a thing. Like, I have to have some sort of big idea already in order to deconstruct what I'm trying to create. And so for someone to just say posters was like, I don't know what that means. And I then, I do on occasion work in the film industry, because I have a lot of friends in film, and I got hired to work on a psych wall, painting it with one other person. And so you basically got two people on a scissor lift for 8 to 10 hours. And the person who hired us knew that we would be friends, and ended up connecting me to this really outspoken, kind of loudmouth feminist man who really cares about oppressive systems. And so we spent the entire time deconstructing the socioeconomic problems that face humanity while we're painting this psych wall. And he reinvigorated my sense of activism, because it was something that I had sort of let go of for a while. And shortly after that, Ferguson hit, and I just saw social media explode with pain and grief and a sense of desperation that just almost seems like there's nothing that anyone can do, right? A lot of us don't live in a socioeconomic bracket that we can just donate a ton of money to every organization that we care about. And as a problem-solving person and a branding strategist, suddenly all these things came together. And I was just like, right, posters and progress and community, and let's use them to serve. And so I figured out the structure of what it would take to get artists engaged in doing what we do. I had a print studio. There are illustrators and poets and short form writers and designers all over who would give time and energy for things that they care about, but they don't necessarily have a reproducible medium that can do that. And posters have long been used throughout history to engage in activism. It's a kind of their purpose is mass communication on big ideas that are affecting society and culture. So why not use them for that? Why not use them as a form of activism? And I put it out to my community, and all of a sudden the feedback that I was getting on the idea was huge. Everybody wanted to be a part of it in some way. And then I found paper sponsorship, and, you know, I could go out into the world and tell people this is what I'm trying to achieve. And the amount of support that came back just showed me that it was a thing that needed to happen. And I already had a lot of nonprofit contacts, but the number one feedback I typically got from nonprofits is we really need to engage the arts. We don't know how to engage the arts. We understand that art would actually help us with our brand, help us with our communications, help us raise funds, because a lot of nonprofits do art auctions. And I would go to them with this idea, tell them what I wanted to achieve, which was I'm going to pull together a community of people who are willing to make art around your core theme. So what I would like for you to do as an organization is distill your mission down to one word. What does your work mean to you in one word? And they would come back to me with that word. And then I would give the word to the partnering artist. The artist typically had some emotional connection to the mission of that organization. They had some personal attachment to it. And I give them the word, and they had creative freedom to do whatever they wanted. So that it was art. It wasn't just design. It was, the project is design, but the actual end result was gallery-worthy print art. And everybody just said yes to this, and that's how the whole project came into being. After a while, I started seeing what was accumulating, though, in the body of work and how diverse everything was, and was really kind of proud, because I didn't even know it was going to happen. Last year was the first year that I did it, and I knew that something cool was going to result. I didn't know what. And then as the posters started going out into the world and I started seeing what was happening with them, I also started realizing how much money they were making for these organizations. One organization made $5,000 off their run of prints, and another one made almost 10 grand. And, exponentially it goes out. I had 11 prints. If they all used them, the value of that project becomes somewhere between $50,000 to $100,000 for the entire run of organizations that happens annually. And that's a lot for people who can't give anything except their time. We actually are making, and what I saw was that it's a demonstration of how we can pull together something that is easy for us to do and then produce it in a way that creates a body of work that is worth having, but also does something in the world that none of us could have done alone. And seeing how that rolled out makes me just want to keep doing it. And now other artists are wanting to get involved. And it's that process of, creating a lot of things, that you have to start it and get it going, see it fail a couple times, work out kinks. But then once you actually have the mission for it, it's easier for people to go, okay, yeah, I'm in. And so the second year is going to be even better, and the third, and, it's just going to keep improving from here, which is exciting to see. Because that kind of potential, fundraising potential for these organizations is huge, for organizations that, struggle. All nonprofits struggle to make money, in some form. So it's one of the things I'm happiest about, because I just get to do what I love.
Yeah.
I like running the machines. I like collaborating with other artists. Yeah. I like seeing what we can do together. It's a fun exercise for me, and I'm going to be down here printing anyway.
Might as well.
I might as well spend some of that time printing for something that, means something and matters. And then the friendships that get built and formed through that collaboration, they just keep rolling out and other art keeps coming and it just keeps building on itself.
It does. Yeah. Well, Lenny, I'm excited to see where a year in giving grows to in years two and three and beyond. But in the meantime, would love for you to let all of our listeners know how they can get in touch and get involved.
My website is Lenspiece, LENSPEACE. And you can contact me at create@lenspiece.com. A year in giving is specific to give@lenspiece.com. So if you're interested in partnering as an artist or being a part of that project in some way, then please feel free to touch base. I'm always looking for new collaborators to work with me. And other than that, you can go see the show at Wonder Root until March 4th. I'll be there for the closing party. And otherwise, I look forward to maybe meeting you out in the world.
All right. Lenny Gray Morris, thank you for your time.
Thank you.